That's right, that's right, that's right. You hear the music, you know what time it is. Chase and TD.
But maybe there's no Chase McCabe this week. It's a little different.
Hey, listen to this. I'm a bargain shopper.
Yeah.
And tonight, folks, you are getting a bargain. You're getting Talking with TD, Calvin's Corner, and Chase and TD is what I call a buy one, get two free.
All wrapped up in one. Not on Friday nights. We're moving it to Thursday. Preds game tomorrow here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And I'm Calvin Smith, sitting alongside Teron Davenport, super pumped to fill in for Chase today on Chase and TD.
Yes, sir. And we have a big show for you tonight. We have Vaughn McClure, ESPN's NFL Nation Falcons reporter. Obviously, there's a whole lot to get into because this 1-2 team has a lot to be broken down from the quarterback to the defense to the special teams.
I think we have a lot
teams
to talk about after that Jaguars game.
The offensive line. I'll start with the offensive line, frankly. And we were talking about it before the break or before we actually came on. Calais Campbell, man. That guy presented all kinds of problems for that Titans offensive line. And just like I said, man, I ducked out of the rain and I'm standing in the tunnel. And it was like Will Smith when he played Muhammad Ali, you know, and he came into the room. He's like, the champ is here. That's all I heard over and over again was big time players make big time plays and big time games. And he just said it over and over and over again. And I said, oh my goodness. Ben Jones, Roger Saffold, Jamil Douglas, they better bring their A game tonight.
That's a 6'8" man in the tunnel getting ready for a game. And no wonder he went off. He was attacking where the Titans were the weakest at this point, and that's along that interior. Jamil Douglas hasn't been the best on the pass blocking this year, and you know, he's not really the guy who anyone expects to be the long term option. And Calais Campbell just absolutely feasted and was a big reason Marcus Mariota would get a little bit uncomfortable in the pocket a few times, had to make some moves, and oh yeah, he also got sacked a lot.
Yeah, and it was tough for him. I will give Marcus credit. There were a few times where he stared down that daggone Calais Campbell, and he delivered a strike. There was one, it was a deep crossing route, Delaney walk. It was a third and long. Mm-hmm. Delaney had a deep crosser. He delivered a strike to him, and they got the first down. Of course, the very next play, Calais got his revenge and got the sack. But it was a tough outing because I let off with Calais Campbell. But let me tell you something. 41, Josh Allen, man, he had himself Jack Conklin for lunch.
Mm-hmm, he did.
And dinner. He ate Jack Conklin a lot. And you hate to see a guy, a former All-Pro, a Pro Bowl caliber player, have the struggles that he had with a rookie. But Josh Allen is different.
Well, he was a superstar in the SEC. And I remember when I was going back watching the All-22, there was one play where Delaney Walker was given the assignment of blocking him. And I saw that and thought, oh, man, as good of a player as Delaney Walker is, he's not an offensive lineman. He's not equipped to block Josh Allen coming off the edge. So Josh Allen literally just kind of ran around him, forced Marcus up in the pocket, and an errant throw because he couldn't set his feet, even though I believe it was Jonnu Smith who was running across the field and was open, but Marcus couldn't see it because he was forced to get off his feet. And that's kind of a problem if Delaney Walker's having to go one-on-one with someone we know can be a great pass rusher in the NFL.
So let's get right into it because obviously we mentioned mismatches. What about play calling? I personally think this was a game where that short passing game, it had to be implemented.
Yeah.
And I think when you have guys getting defeated the way the offensive line was getting defeated, I think you have to incorporate quick-hitting plays. I think it's mandatory to get RPOs going. I think it's mandatory to use different plays that make it a lot easier for Marcus Mariota to read. Whereas you're reading one defender.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what? If he takes this curl, I'm going to throw the flat. Flat curl was something. I remember we used to use that all the time in college. And it was basically stealing.
Yeah.
Right? The linebacker plays the curl. Now, of course, this is in zone. The linebacker plays the curl, you throw the flat.
Mm-hmm.
He plays the flat, you throw the curl. And just make it easy to get the ball out of your hands quickly. And that's something that I think they could have done a better job of.
Well, because what do we know about Marcus Mariota? We know that he's good in situations where he doesn't have to think too much.
Right.
He's not the kind of cerebral quarterback who's going to pick you apart with all these different kind of changes at the line, and he's not, especially with all the offensive coordinator changes, he's just not mentally the sharpest quarterback in the NFL, and that's okay. And I think that's what's so frustrating for a lot of Titans fans right now, is that sometimes he'll make these great plays, but then there are other times where it's like he's thinking about it and he kind of breaks down. His mechanics in the pocket get a little shaky. He kind of goes into this shell and he seems uncertain. And with Marcus Mariota, like you said, quick hitting passing is something that can be more easily replicable than long passing in those kind of situations where the Titans were down early, and that kind of forces you to get off your game plan a little bit. The Titans would rather play good defense, be sound fundamentally, and run the ball to Derrick Henry. But when Adoree Jackson has that play early on in the game that sets you behind the eight ball, you can't abandon what you want to do, but you're a bad coach if you don't make some kind of a small adjustment to ensure you're trying to get back in that game. And that's when things go downhill for Marcus Mariota, when everything isn't in the ideal situation that they were setting up for him with a strong running game and good defense.
Yeah, and the thing is, there are some throws that he makes down the field. That, like that throw, the drop in the bucket to Adam Humphries along the sideline.
Yep.
That was a beautiful throw. The throw to Tajae Sharpe. Hey, by the way, Tajae did an awesome job of setting Jalen Ramsey up and stacking him and being able to catch that long pass. I think it was a 47-yarder. But those are throws that Marcus Mariota makes, and you're like, that's what I'm talking
about.
It's
there. It can happen.
And that's the thing. But then there are times where he doesn't connect with his receivers. He doesn't see them. Or he tends to brace himself too early when he's about to get sacked. And that's the thing. There is a way that you could take a QB pressure and keep it from being a sack, and that's by getting rid of the ball. And he even showed that in glimpses. And that's why it's just so frustrating watching a guy like Mariota, because he shows you so much, but then at the same time, he shows you so little. It's tough. But, I mean, again, when you have the offensive line taking a beating up front, you have to make some adjustments. And one of the things that the Jaguars did really well was actually they played games up front, whereas they were able to go against Roger Saffold and Ben Jones, or even Dennis Kelly and Saffold, and they had different twists and those type of things going on. And that's how you take a guy like Calais Campbell and a guy like Yannick Ngakoue, and you make them even better through the games that you play.
Exactly. And the Jaguars defense, that's exactly what they had to do, because when we look at this Titans offensive line, they're without Taylor Lewan. Roger Saffold is new. Jameel Douglas isn't the guy. I'll just put it like that. He isn't the guy. He's not a standout at any really one thing. He's just kind of there, is the nicest way I can put it. And playing those games, like you said, where they're mixing things up just makes life really hard if you're in that situation where the continuity isn't at its best 3 weeks into the season.
And, you know, the thing was, on that particular sack that I'm talking about where they played the game, it was almost like they blocked it right, but there just wasn't anything there for Mariota. And then in addition to that, you had Josh Allen looping from the outside. And it was basically, like, I always use the saying, like, I always liken pass rush to hunting, right? Lions hunting gazelles. And that's exactly how that situation was, because you had the one come from the outside to flush Mariota up. And then in the game that they played up front, Campbell got the interior pressure, and then Ngakoue was there. Or no, excuse me, Ngakoue got the interior pressure, and Campbell was there to clean up when Mariota tried to flush out of the pocket. As a matter of fact, as we said, talking with TD is going to be incorporated into this show. Buy one, get two free. So we're going to go ahead and go to the breakdown with Roger Saffold. He's one of the play breakdowns for this week.
So this was the play with 91 and 93. They ran the game up front, and they ended up getting a set. What are you seeing on this play?
Right now what I'm seeing is that I got a wide one. Make sure I get it to Dennis. Dennis takes over the three. We have the late twist with 91. That we knock him outside. Jack is doing a good job of running him around the edge. There's nothing really downfield. So Mariota tries to run and kind of runs into Dennis and Jack's block.
Now, when you have that kind of game that they play, like, what's the fundamental, like, what's the coaching point? How do you go against that?
We actually do just what we did. The guard is supposed to punch the three technique out to the tackle. The tackle takes it over, and we make sure that the tackle is secure before we go out to the end, and then we push the end out, and that's what we did.
Now, this week with McKinley and Beasley, was Brady Jarrett, they like to kind of coordinate the pass rush when you have a deeper guy on the outside, but then, you know, how much does not being able to protect that pocket on the interior, like how much does that make those pass rushes more effective?
Not being able to protect the interior, how?
So if a guy has come up wide and he's deeper,
yeah,
you know the quarterback wants to step up within the pocket to avoid that deeper pass rush, but if he can't, that rush will get there.
Basically, I mean, you know, they do run deeper, but as long as you're running them past around, I say 10 to 12 yards, we should be able to keep the structure of the pocket intact. If we got to protect for the center and the inside two guards, I mean, the biggest things you can't do is get bulled into the quarterback's left. That's the one thing that you want to avoid. And when you got guys like Bailey and people who have the quickness of Jarrett, you got to make sure that you're able to keep in front of them and keep and stay firm.
Thanks.
So that was Roger Saffold explaining that game that they played. And there's a reason why I asked that last question. We're going to get into that in a couple segments.
Yep.
I want to talk about the coordinated pass rush. And I actually had a good conversation with Coach Vrabel on a sidebar about this. So we'll get into that a little bit later. But I do like the way Saffold said that it's so important to keep that interior part of the pocket secure so the quarterback could step up. Unfortunately, it wasn't there for him this time.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of what we talk about with Tom Brady, too, is how do teams beat Tom Brady? How do they beat the New England Patriots? They have guys like Fletcher Cox who can beat you up the middle and force Tom Brady to move around in a way that he's not comfortable with. And that's an underrated part of the game. Maybe the most underrated part of football is guard play that people don't talk about because it's not easily understandable and it's not flashy. But we're seeing with the Tennessee Titans right now how you need stable guard play, or it's really hard for your quarterback to get comfortable in the pocket, to move around, or go through his progressions correctly.
You mentioned the importance of attacking Tom Brady up the middle.
Yep.
That sack strip that Brandon Graham had to kind of seal the Super Bowl, he bumped inside to play D-tackle.
Yep.
And he forklift that right guard, and he was able to swipe that ball away. So that's an example of just the importance of attacking the middle part of the
offensive line.
Lost my train of thought. Yeah, the interior part of the pocket. So we're going to go ahead and go to a break. We'll be right back. We got ESPN NFL Nation reporter Vaughn McClure. All right, back from the break, Chase and TD. We're going to keep it moving. This is kind of like the segment I call phone a friend, right? You know, you got to use your lifelines. So I'm going to use my ESPN NFL Nation connections. We're going to bring in my guy, Vaughn McClure from Atlanta, Hotlanta, straight out the jungle. Vaughn, what's up, man?
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing really well, man. I appreciate you coming on. And I want to kind of just get right into this situation that the Titans secondary has on their hands. I mean, 11 is basically a human cheat code. What is it about Vaughn, what is it about Julio Jones that makes him such a dangerous threat in the passing game?
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, the thing that I've noticed about Julio being around him all these years is he's already athletically gifted, but the guy works just as hard, if not harder, than anybody. He works to perfect his craft. I watch him in practice. He really explodes out of his breaks. I mean, just a great all-around player. And he's always looking for little ways to get better. You'll see him on the jugs machine after practice. You'll see him talking to the other receivers and kind of discussing, hey, how can we do this better? What can we do better? So that's one thing, is he's got the drive to be the best. And I'm going to tell you this. He respects the other defensive backs that he's going against, but he doesn't praise them, okay, because he feels like he's the best around. Hmm. He feels like nobody can stop him. And that's the mentality that makes him such an unstoppable guy. Yeah, he might give this DB a little bit of credit here and there, but he's not going to say, hey, you know what? I'm worried about this guy. I'm studying this guy or whatever. He feels like he's that good that nobody can stop him.
Now, I talked to defensive coordinator Dean Pease, and he talked about how quarterbacks nowadays, even if a guy is covered, they're still throwing them the football. With Julio, are they getting into a situation where they force feed him the football, or how is it coming about where he's consistently getting targets, but it's the right targets?
Well, that's a great question. I'm going to tell you why. I don't think Matt Ryan forces him the ball enough. Okay. you look at some of the interceptions that Matt has, that hasn't always been to Julio. I mean, the one that he had last week, he threw to the tight end, Stocker. He probably should have been throwing to Julio in that scenario. I think you got to give Julio more chances, even if he is drawing the two man, like he always likes to say, he's always drawing two man. Give him a chance to go up there and get the ball, because he can go up and get the ball in that kind of traffic. So when you ask that question like that, that's what I see. Matt Ryan, he's got 6 interceptions right now. He had 7 all year last season. Mm. He's forcing the ball in some situations, but again, I don't feel like it's always to Julio. And plus, he's got a lot of targets to go to, and he should spread the ball around, even though you know Julio is the number one guy.
Joined by ESPN Falcons reporter Vaughn McClure here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Vaughn, I want to ask you about another wide receiver in this talented Falcons wide receiver room, and that's Calvin Ridley. He got off to a pretty good start to the year, 4 catches, 64 yards, then exploded in week 2, but then in week 3, 1 catch for 6 yards against the Colts. What kind of happened there that led to that inconsistency?
Had a great conversation with Calvin about that this week, and he said, plain and simple, he couldn't shake free from the Colts with their coverage, with their cover 2. And they really, he said there really was no wiggle room for him to get free in that game. In fact, offensive coordinator at the Dirk Cutter at the podium on Monday, he blamed himself. He said, I didn't do a good enough job of getting Calvin Ridley involved. But then Ridley came back and said, hey, look, Coach Cutter's done a great job of getting me involved the first couple games. But look, against the Colts, I just couldn't shake free. And one thing that happened too, guys, he showed up on the injury report with a hip injury that we did not know about. Calvin told me it's something that happened against the Eagles. He got hit coming across the middle by McLeod and hit him on the right side. He seems to be okay. He's limping a little bit, but he said he's going to be okay to play. But Calvin Ridley is a great target. He's a guy that's going to be great for years to come. And here's the thing. We talk about Julio Jones. When Julio gets that double coverage, then that opens up opportunity for guys like Ridley to be single covered and win their one-on-one matchups. And to me, Calvin Ridley one-on-one against somebody, he's going to win those matchups because he's such a great route runner.
With this wide receiver core and a good quarterback in Matt Ryan, have you seen a defense against the Falcons that can stop Julio, slow down Calvin Ridley enough, and stop the offense in a successful way where the opposing team's offense doesn't have to go out and score 30 points to beat them? And what do they do when they're successful?
Well, yeah, like I just said, a little bit with the Colts with their cover too. You know, they were able to bracket both Julio and Ridley on the edges, and you know, the tight end, Austin Hooper, he had some open looks because of that. But when you're slowing down those guys, Ridley and Julio both had 100-yard games against the Eagles. So the Colts said, hey, you know what, we're not going to let these two guys beat us. You can beat us with the other guys. And it worked. It worked in their favor in that game. Also, when I go back to the Eagles game, they blitzed Matt Ryan a lot. They really blitzed zero coverage. Matt Ryan said it was the most blitzing that he had seen in his career, and it ended up working in their favor that they were able to get after him. But guess what? The Falcons still was able to pull out that game despite all the zero coverage he was seeing.
And that's really interesting because Jim Schwartz traditionally doesn't blitz, so there must be something that he saw. I want to flip it to the other side, because I feel like the Falcons' defense is full of playmakers. And obviously, Keanu Neal is out. But Tack McKinley is an interesting player. What is it about him combining with Vic Beasley and those guys attacking on the outside? What makes them so effective?
Well, you know what? It's interesting that you would bring his name up first, and I'm not disagreeing with you, Teron, that he has some ability. But when I'm looking at their line, the first guy I'm looking at is Grady Jarrett. Okay,
that's where I was going next.
Grady makes that whole line work. You know, he's such a disruptive force in the middle. I think he makes things so much easier for Tack and Vic coming off the edges because people have to be concerned about what Grady Jarrett's going to do and the way he's able to get into the backfield. And Teron, if I'm going to look at those two pass rushers, I know Vic Beasley's had a couple sacks here, but I like the dog that Tack McKinley has in him. He's a dog. You know, they need that kind of dog like, hey, you know, he don't care about nothing. He's trying to eat you. You know what I'm saying? That's just who he is. And they need that kind of mentality up front. If he works on polishing his pass rush moves and gets better and works with Dan Quinn, who's supposed to be the defensive line guru, and improves his game, he can be a dominant force. I think what happens with Tack McKinley sometimes, he gets a little frustrated with himself when he doesn't get to the quarterback. He gets a little frustrated with himself when he hears criticism. But if he can channel that in the right way, yes, Teron, I think he's going to be a really good player in this league.
Yeah, and that's where I was going next because I wanted to lead into just a coordinated pass rush. We have Grady Jarrett collapse in the middle, and then you have the guys on the outside. But let's go to the second level of the defense and look at Deion Jones. How effective can he be against the run, and how big of a part of the run defense is he?
And good, I love the questions that you're asking because you ask great topics that are very topical to what they're dealing with right now. With Deion, don't get me wrong. Deion is a great, great player. He's fast. He's a guy that makes up for a lot of mistakes that people make because he can make up for it because he's probably one of the fastest, if not the fastest linebacker in the league.
Yeah.
But Deion is small, okay?
Right.
Don't get that wrong. Deion's a small guy. So there's been offensive linemen, particularly with Philadelphia, that he's experienced in his year, that the offensive linemen will get on him and knock him out the way like nothing because he's a smaller guy. His linebackers coach, Jeff Olbrich, has talked all the time about, hey, you need to pick up a little bit more weight, you know, so he can play that big boy ball and stuff like that. Great player. Great, great player. I love the way he plays, and he's perfect for today's linebacker, you know. It's not like the Brian Urlachers of years before with these big old linebackers and stuff like that. He's got that speed and stuff like that, but that's where I think sometimes teams take advantage. They say, okay, he's a smaller guy. Let's run at him. Let's get this offensive lineman blocking him out the way, and then you got room to run. So that's where I think they want to see Deion improve a little. He's great at covering running backs out of the backfield, okay? He might cover a tight end here and there. He can keep up with those guys, okay? But, you know, if you're going to run straight at him and put a big body on him, that might be where you can be effective.
Teron mentioned it towards the beginning of the interview. Keanu Neal went out last week, and Kamal Ishmael steps into his place. Now, he's a guy who's been in the league since 2013, but how much of a drop-off do you expect to be in production and being in the right place as a safety going down from Neal to Ishmael?
Well, what they're going to do, it's not going to be about Ishmael totally. It's going to be safety by committee. What I can see the Falcons doing, of course, you know, you're going against, I'm assuming the Titans like to run big personnel. So I think when they have that big personnel out there, you know, whether it be a couple tight ends, whether it be with Derrick Henry running the ball, I think Ishmael's your guy because he's a good tackler. He's kind of a good in-the-box guy. But when you're talking about coverage, I think they're going to switch some things up. I think you can see DeMonte Casey, who led the league with 7 interceptions last season. He's playing the nickelback role. I can see him maybe dropping back into safety in certain situations. There's a kid named Sherrod Naisman that plays safety. I can see him playing that role in some situations. Ricardo Allen is starting free safety. He's played some strong safety in the past, so maybe they move him over. Maybe they let Casey come back to the free safety role. So I think it'll be a safety by committee in replacing Neal, but Ishmael's going to be the guy that kind of brings the hammer, is going to be the kind of guy that comes in and be the run stopper, the run support, the in-the-box guy. He's a bigger guy. He was playing linebacker, so you know, they made him switch back over to safety. So I think he can help in that aspect, but you're not going to replace Keanu Neal. Keanu Neal meant a lot to this team. Not only was he kind of like the heart and soul, but he was the enforcer out there. And he had become better in coverage, especially against tight ends. I see him improve a lot in that area. So that's going to be something that they definitely miss.
No doubt about it. Vaughn, we appreciate you taking some time. And listen, I'm going to be there Saturday afternoon. I definitely need a couple recommendations as far as places to go and eat. So you could definitely shout that out for me when you get a chance. Shoot me a text message, man. I have to get that from you.
Okay, I got you, brother, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Okay, guys, take care.
No doubt. Appreciate you, Vaughn.
Okay.
So that was Vaughn McClure, ESPN. Man, that's a lot of knowledge about this football team, and I appreciate Vaughn sharing that. Deion Jones, it's an interesting situation with him, and he's right. He is a bit smaller.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I always like about smaller guys is their agility, their ability to make these linemen miss in space. So we'll see how that works when these guys try to get to the second level and block him so that Derrick Henry can do what he does and break off those runs.
Well, Derrick Henry's bigger than him, and that's something I feel like we can say a lot, but Derrick, a running back being bigger than a linebacker is always going to be a plus, and we've never seen Derrick Henry get caught in the open field, so it's not like he's just a bruising back. But Deion Jones in the coverage game is something I'm also excited to see if he's on Delanie Walker at some point.
Yeah, that'd be something to see. So we'll definitely stay tuned for that. We're going to go ahead to a break. We kind of led into the next topic with Vaughn. We're going to talk about coordinated pass rushes. We'll be right back.
This is Jason TD here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, but I am not Chase McCabe. I'm Calvin Smith here filling in for Chase as Chase is on a little bit of a vacation before Preds season gets going, but I'm still beside the one and only Teron Davenport.
That's right.
We are talking about some Titans versus Falcons after a pretty disappointing Jaguars game. Teron, you were in Jacksonville in that rain. But now we're going to shift our focus after talking to Vaughn McClure about this Falcons defense and how they match up against the Titans' weakest point, probably, the offensive line right now, specifically the interior, and ways they can confuse them. Because they have a guy named Grady Jarrett, who just got paid in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very talented guy. Vaughn McClure raved about him. But Tack McKinley, Vic Beasley on the outside as well, they can do a lot of different things and bring pressure at you with a lot of different concepts that can confuse an offensive line that still is without Taylor Lewan, who's on suspension, a new guard in Roger Saffold, who I'm sure it's hard to gain continuity without the guy who you're going to play beside there, and Jameel Douglas, and the uncertainty at right guard that we've talked ad nauseum about.
Yeah, and of course you got Ben Jones in the mix too, so it's going to be interesting. But yeah, Grady Jarrett, that is a grown man. And you talk about having really swift, strong, powerful hands. That's what he has. And he's a guy that can get into the backfield very quickly. And I want to get into just some of the coordinated pass rushes that the Falcons are able to put together. And it's interesting with this team because you have Vic Beasley, you have Tack McKinley rushing the passer from those wider alignments, and they come in, and sometimes they get really deep, right, with their pass rush. Sometimes they get as deep as 10 to 11 yards. Now, typically, as a tackle, when you have a guy rushing upfield like that, you get into your set, you club him with your inside arm and just ride him all the way down out of the way.
You kind of let him do it almost.
You let him do it. But it's tough to do that when you have the interior part of it being collapsed because the quarterback's going to naturally see what's in front of him. So when you have a Grady Jarrett collapsing the pocket on the interior, doing what I call the bouncer motion where you just smoothly escort a guy back to the quarterback, like you're moving him out of a club. That's what happens, and he tends to step back. So now, with that pocket being collapsed from the interior, the guy who has the deeper pass rush, now you're just condensing, and it goes back to that analogy where I was talking about lions hunting gazelles. And that's what ends up happening. I actually asked Mike Vrabel about just the way this team is able to put together those coordinated rushes. And he referred me to, and it's ironic because the Eagles are about to come on, but he referred me to one of the sacks that Vic Beasley had against the Eagles. Whereas you have Carson Wentz who, listen, Carson Wentz is he's Houdini in the pocket.
Mm-hmm.
It is hard to bring that guy down. But Grady Jarrett collapsed the middle. Tack McKinley came around his end, but most importantly, Vic Beasley, he was about 10 yards deep on his rush, but he was able to come back around and sack hopefully not Mariota for the Titans' sake this week, but he's able to come back around and sack Wentz, and it ended up being a sack that should not have happened. Because if you find yourself 10 yards down the field as a pass rusher, you pretty much are out of the play.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, it goes back. When you have a guy like Grady Jarrett, you look at the Titans, they have a guy like Jarrell Casey. You look at the Falcons, you know, with what they're able to do, that outside pass rush becomes more effective because there's less space that they have to cover.
I get the feeling that, kind of similar to the Jaguars game, the Falcons have a lineup that is just going to get pressure. On every play, maybe not. But there are going to be times when the offensive line can play well, but the Falcons just have the talent to beat them. They have the scheme to beat them. Dan Quinn, like Vaughn said, supposed to be the defensive line wizard. He was in Seattle. They did good things there.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's going to come down to Marcus Mariota moving through the pocket naturally again, because this offensive line, they haven't been great, but I don't think they've been the worst in the NFL either so far through this year. And it's kind of a mixed bag, right? Because they're going to get pressure, and then Marcus Mariota, how's he going to move? How's he going to react when they get beat? Because the state of them right now is to a point where they aren't going to give Marcus Mariota every second he can have to throw the ball.
And that's such an interesting dynamic, because if you look at now, and this is again where stats don't always show everything, right? Because if you look, Marcus Mariota is averaging 2.5 seconds in the pocket on plays that end in a sack. And that's the 11th longest in the NFL.
Yeah.
So you want to say he's not getting that time? And I will agree with you. There are times where he isn't getting time within the pocket. But 11th in the league is not too bad. But then you look, he is averaging 2.97 seconds before passing this season, which is the fifth longest in the NFL. And the league average is 2.71 seconds. So it's
which is 0.2 of a second in the NFL is an eternity. That's a long time.
Yeah, that's quite a time. So it's such a mix where there are times, like you look at that fourth down. That fourth down, the fourth and six where they went for it. Man, Calais Campbell might as well have taken the ball and given it to Mariota before he tackled him, because he was right there.
Yes.
So there are times where it's just like, who was even up front to protect him? But then there are other times where he has the time and you're just, what the heck are you doing still holding on to the football?
It's such a mixed bag. It's like a great problem to try to solve, because if it's not one thing, it's the other. And then when Marcus Mariota has time, maybe he doesn't move correctly. Or if Marcus Mariota gets the read he's looking for, but then Calais Campbell is right in his face immediately. It just kind of, it seems so hard for an offense to gain continuity when it's one thing or the other, then another thing. Then maybe on one play, the receivers aren't open. It just kind of all stacks up to form a game where Marcus Mariota goes 23 for 40. And it all falls on him, but there's so much going on up front where it's like a lot of variables to take into account. And when so many of them are inconsistent, how are you supposed to accurately predict what's going to happen if you're the quarterback, if you're the coach, if you're the offensive lineman? How are you going to figure it out if you're not really sure how it's going to play out, if you can't be confident that, hey, I know player X is going to get the play here?
And you mentioned something when you said 0.2 of a second or something, whatever you had said is an eternity in the league. That little bit of hesitation that Mariota has at times where he'll see something, but he just doesn't believe it.
Yes.
Sometimes, and when he does see it and believe it and lets the thing go, you're like, wow.
It's like that throw to Tajay Sharp. It drops in there, it's a catch, and it's 25 yards.
And that's the thing. If he could just work on speeding up that processing, and that's where the tempo goes. Actually, I pulled Ryan Tannehill aside and asked him about it, because I remember him running tempo a lot of times in Miami. And I just asked him point blank. I said, listen, does that make your decision making go a little bit faster?
Read and react.
And he said, naturally, everything happens faster because you're running tempo. So your decision making is going to speed up, but it also depends on what you're doing, obviously. But I think it's really just, it should be a no brainer for this team to use more tempo. And if we're looking at this from a perspective of this team being as Mariota friendly as possible, for me, it goes back to what I said, quick hitting routes. It goes back to another thing that we talked about, simple reads, but then tempo. If you combine all of those, you go back to what he did at Oregon. Now, granted, you're not going to have the huge floor-to-ceiling windows that Mariota had at Oregon, but still you're getting him more back into his element, and that is crucial for a guy like Mariota who is trying to establish himself as a franchise-caliber quarterback.
With Marcus Mariota, I feel like a lot of it comes down to we don't see the confidence on some plays. Yeah. And, you know, when you talk about inconsistencies in front of you, of course it's harder to be confident. But I think one way to get a guy in his comfort zone, get the ball out quick, hit a couple quick passes, let him get rolling, and feel like, okay, I'm a little bit in control of this game. I'm a little bit in control of this drive. Now it's only second and three or whatever.
Yeah.
Things seem a little
keeping it manageable.
Things seem a little bit more under his control. And then that's when you can open it up, maybe take that shot I like. Or you can just continue to keep him in his zone. And then when he's ready to be unleashed and the bridles are ready to come off, then you're good. But with him, it's kind of like square peg, round hole sometimes, where he's not read the defense, make an adjustment at the line. You've got to put him in a position where he's comfortable, and that seems to be when he's no huddle. And that's kind of interesting because you feel like you'd be more comfortable when you're, okay, things are a little bit calmer now, but he is a read and react guy. Because when we see him go out and run, he'll go make a play.
Yeah.
He'll go jump around and throw his body on the line. It's terrifying if you're the Tennessee Titans, but he's just that kind of guy. And I think that's just more evidence that, hey, a little bit more earlier on, a little bit more quick passing earlier on to get him in his zone.
A simple way to look at this, bunch formation, zero splits. You could have double slants and a double slants from your outside receiver, your number one and your number two, and then your number three, run a speed out. Run those slants a couple times, get those safeties to bite a little bit, and those are quick, easy throws and a quick, easy read. Then it's pump fake, go up top, the slow go, slow go seam. So those are ways that this team could find a way to get the ball out of Mariota's hands quicker. We're going to go ahead to a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about some pass catchers on the other side of the ball, and that's the Falcons receivers. So fresh and so clean. All right, back from the break. Man, that right there, Sunday mornings, that's my theme music, baby.
They get you in a mood where you just kind of feeling yourself a little bit.
All I could think of is ironing my shirt, hit a little steam on the bow tie, and then throw that thing together. That whole song plays in my mind when I'm getting ready, you know what I'm saying? So I appreciate you bringing us in on that, Elijah. We're going to keep the Atlanta theme going. As you notice, every artist that we've played tonight is an Atlanta-based artist because obviously that's where the Titans are going, to Atlanta. It's time to look at the pass catchers. We'll take a quick look at some of those. We talked about Julio Jones earlier. What do you like so much about Julio Jones?
What isn't there to like?
Right.
Like, you're talking about one of the tallest receivers in the NFL, the strongest, and also he's one of the fastest in a straight line, and he can run good routes. Best receiver in the league is no hyperbole when you talk about a guy like that. And when you relate it to the Titans, as good as this secondary is, it's certainly a strength of this team. As much as, you know, as well as Malcolm Butler's paid, as much as we like Logan Ryan, as great of a safety as Kevin Byard is, there's not anybody in the league who can look Julio Jones in the eye and say, I'm locking you down for this entire game.
I don't think there's anybody on earth that could
do
that, to be honest with you.
Certainly not.
And that's not to be overly complimentary of number 11, but it's just speaking the truth. And it's just so interesting the way he's so big and runs routes like a smaller guy.
Yep.
And that's what makes it so hard. There aren't any routes in particular that you can say, okay, you know what? this is, if you stop this, you'll stop Julio. He runs the square in, he runs the deep in, he runs the post, the back shoulder. You could do screens, slants, everything you want. And that's what makes him so hard to stop. Now, for me, as a defensive back, if I were to be put in the bad predicament of having to defend Julio Jones, outside of praying, what I would do is just focus on every single time he looks the ball into the tuck after the catch. I'm punching and punching and punching, trying to punch that ball out. That is your best chance, because what goes up must come down. Mm-hmm. So at some point he's going to come down to you. Is what can you do when he comes down to you?
He's the kind of guy you can't outskill, because he's maybe the most skilled player in the NFL at his position. But what you can be is annoying. You can just be in his head. You can always be there. Everywhere he is, giving him a little tap. Hey, I'm right here, Julio. Like, I'm never leaving you alone. And just, if you're the kind of corner, maybe like Malcolm Butler is, who can just always be in him. Hey, I'm right here. I'm right here. Don't go anywhere, Julio. I'm right here. Yeah, just kind of talking to him the whole game, just always getting in him a little bit. That's the best chance you have to slow him down, is hopefully you knock him out of a frame of mind, even though he seems like a mentally tough guy, because he is just even keel and cool, team first all the time.
Yeah, Malcolm Butler, that's one feisty dude, man. And I could just picture him with that high pitch voice. Julio, you ain't doing nothing today. I could just picture him. But yeah, I mean, you're right. That's what you have to do. But the thing that's so crazy, and what I think this Falcons team has done a really good job of, is finding guys to compliment Julio. We talked a little bit about Calvin Ridley, and I'll say this, when it comes to precision in your route running, it doesn't get much better than him. The guy popped into the league last year. I think it was double-digit touchdowns that he had. He's eaten on the opposite side of Julio Jones. Yep. But the guy I want to focus on is Mohamed Sanu. And I think it's really a shame how underrated he is and how big of a part he plays for this offense. When you look at him just in the slot and just running those tougher garbage time routes, that he reminds me of like a Dennis Rodman in basketball, where he does all the ugly stuff, but does it so well.
Kind of thrives on that too. Like, he knows that's his role, and he knows he's good at it. And you know, he's not the most talented guy, but when you think of, I don't want to say a dump off option, because I think he's better than that, and he does more than that. But doing the dirty work, like you said, and being a guy who takes pride in, hey, like, I am a glue piece to this receiving core that puts it all together. Because Calvin Ridley, you know, incredibly precise with his routes, very fast. Julio Jones, superhuman. Mm-hmm. But just adding this other element of a glue piece. Every great offense, every great team, basketball, baseball, football, has a glue piece. And Mohamed Sanu is that for the offense, where he can fill in those gaps against zones.
Yeah, he's that consistent player for them. And you mentioned filling gaps against zones. And he's someone that I know Matt Ryan can trust to take that licking and keep ticking, so to speak.
Yeah.
Because they could – he's very well built also. You know, like he's not a slouch on the physical side of things either. So he's built to be able to withstand that physical pounding that comes with making a living across the middle. And he's just a tough, gritty guy. And there's no coincidence that one of the tough, gritty guys on the Titans was his college roommate, Logan Ryan.
They were
roommates at Rutgers. So that's a matchup that I'll definitely be watching. And I think that you'll see those guys going against each other because of Sanu's ability to pop inside. And when they go three wide, you'll see him playing a slot.
That's Logan Ryan's specialty, and that's just kind of what he does best, and where I'd certainly expect to see him play. And That's going to make Logan Ryan's matchup even more important, because there are going to be different ways, like Von McClure talked about, with how they play the brackets against Ridley and Jones, and they got to stop those guys because they can do a lot. They can certainly stretch the field on you, and you've got to have a good safety like Kevin Byard to stop them. But Mohamed Sanu is the kind of guy who could eat a little bit if you're not playing on him, and if you're too focused on the more, quote, dynamic players in Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones.
No doubt about it. And Adoree Jackson, to me, is going to be a key part of this. I definitely think it's time for him to step up this week. Absolutely. I think he'll draw Calvin Ridley. But another way he has to step up is if he's called upon to return punts. Talking with TD when we come back is going to involve Adoree going over what happened in Jacksonville on the muffed punt. So we'll go to a break. We'll be right back with Adoree Jackson. talking shop, talking with TD. Can't help but get pumped up when you hear that music, the Chase and TD theme music, except for Chase is somewhere on a beach.
He's out there living the lavish life of a radio host. You know how that goes.
Sitting on a chair, a pair of long shorts on with a flowered shirt, some sunglasses, ice cream cone, a drink with an umbrella in it. Chase is living the life.
Can't fault him for taking a little vacation, going down to Florida, having some fun. But I'm here. Don't worry. Calvin Smith in for Chase McCabe this week on Talking with TD.
That's right. That's right. And what we did was bring in the lefty, huh? We went to the bullpen.
Southpaw, out of the bullpen, Calvin Smith.
So we talked a little bit about offense. We talked about defense and looking back at that Jaguars game. Obviously, there are three phases to the game. Offense, defense, special teams. The Titans are a team who had fared pretty well on the turnover side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Had a big turnover against the Jaguars. They managed to keep the Jaguars, or just keep an offense period, from scoring on the opening drive for the first time. They managed to keep them from doing that. However, Adoree Jackson had a muffed punt, and that put the Jaguars right back into position.
On like the 2-yard line, right?
It was the 7-yard line.
Seven, okay.
But still, it's inside the 10,
yeah.
So call it what you want. Either way, it was scoring position. I wanted to talk to Adoree, and I respect Adoree for sitting down and breaking this play down with me, because for the most part, when I break the plays down, it's something that a guy does well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this was a big mistake. Let's go ahead to Adoree Jackson talking with TD, breaking down that mistake he made on punt return.
So we can slow it down right here. I thought it was going to get up. It bounced at like the, I don't know, 35, 40, whatever it be. I was waiting on it to get another hop. You know, usually it gets a second hop tip. A small hop and a big hop should have hopped in my hand. That's what I was waiting on. I didn't get that. The ball kept rolling. Then at this point, I don't know where I'm at. The 16, I'm just trying to get on the ball. I'm trying to get the ball, you know, to stop it from keep rolling. Misjudged it in my hands. Well, didn't misjudge it. Just didn't grasp with my hands, and then I got hit, and then the ball popped out. I couldn't grab it. Yeah.
Was it kind of a matter? And then there's an end zone view too. That helps you see it better.
No matter what.
Was it kind of a matter of the ball was just slippery and it slipped out, or were you trying to run before you had it?
No, it didn't have nothing to do with the conditions of the field or anything. It just, I guess when I tried to pick the ball up, I didn't grab it right. I didn't get enough of the ball, and it just slipped out of my hand. But it didn't have nothing to do with the ball being slippery or the conditions of the field or whatever it may be. It's just the way that the ball was moving. I didn't get it correctly.
Now, with how explosive you were in college, obviously you were one of the best returners there. Do you find yourself trying to be too aggressive, like pressing too much to get back to that form, or what would you say is keeping that performance at USC from coming here to the league?
No, I don't think I'm trying to be too aggressive or press to do anything on this situation. It was me trying to stop it from going from a bad kick to turn into a good kick, and it's going from a bad kick to turn into a bad play on my behalf. Never out there pressed to do something. I'll just let it come to me, or let it let the game come to me. So. Just the returns, I haven't had any, but I have made some, electrifying runs. I have had some, but I haven't had one that, went to the house. So it's not me being pressed in that situation.
All right, thanks.
I know Adoree is saying he's not pressed and he's not being too aggressive, but obviously he's the one doing it, so he's going to know, but I feel like he is pressing to make plays.
Uh-huh.
And I think in this situation, it's an example of it, because if the guy lets the ball roll, it keeps going back, and now it's downed inside the 5, and it's like, dadgummit, Adoree, when are you going to start fielding these punts? Mm-hmm. Well, here it was, he went to field it, albeit on that hop, and it took an extra hop. He wasn't expecting it to. And I'll tell you, a football, the way it's shaped, there's no telling where it's going to go when it hops and rolls. But I think this really was a case of him trying, not necessarily to do too much as far as catching and running, but trying to do too much as far as keeping it from rolling. And he kind of touched on that when he said he didn't want a bad punt to turn into a good punt.
Dory Jackson is a very natural athlete. Like, he's just a guy who did the triple jump in college at USC, a great track program. And I watch him out there right now, and I don't see the guy I saw with the Trojans. He doesn't have that same swagger, which makes me think as well, maybe he's pushing it a little. Maybe he's trying too hard. Maybe he's a little nervous. He's overthinking it. I don't know what exactly it could be, because I'm not in a Dory's head, but it could be any one of these things, because that guy in college was just running around the field,
just having
tons of fun. Yeah. Exactly. But you don't see that from him right now. And I don't know if that's something with the culture of the Titans and how they're running, but that cornerback, that defensive back group is really fun.
Yeah.
It's a mixed bag with him, and it starts with mental lapses, and then I think it comes down to second-guessing himself. Because like we talked about with Marcus Mariota, a natural athlete, you just want out there on the field making plays. And there's a mental side to this game that you certainly have to take into account. But Adoree Jackson seems to be a little bit too deep into it and in his own head right now for the natural, amazing athlete that he is.
And that's something coming into camp he said he was working on.
Yep.
He wanted to work on not perfecting, but getting the mental part of the game right for him. And I'm not so sure that that's happening. It's Marcus Mariota and Adoree Jackson to me are the same player.
Yeah.
Right? They're the same player, where it's, you saw them do some things in college and it's just like, ooh, I need that on my team.
Yes.
Now that is on your team, you see flashes. Like that interception he had last year in week. Yeah, we're going to last year to bring up good plays, but so what? That interception he had last year in, it was week two, I want to say. No, week three, the Texans game.
Okay.
Where he out-jumped Nuke Hopkins to make the interception. Mm-hmm. In the end, that was a beautiful play.
Yep.
And it showed his ball skills. That game that he had against the Browns. That's how far back I'm going with Josh Gordon. The game that he had against the Patriots.
Yeah.
The way he put the clamps on Josh Gordon. That is what I'm talking about. That's the USC Adoree Jackson. But it's just, this is not something that has come to the surface enough for this team. Well,
that's what's so tough about the NFL, is you can be the greatest athlete on the field, but there's a mental side of the game that Adoree Jackson and Marcus Mariota seem to have to figure out, and it's different for every player. Like, we see the comparisons between Adoree and Marcus is very similar, but at the same time, they might have completely different ways of needing to get it done and adjustments they need to make inside of their head, different things that can happen with the coaches to relate to them, to get their confidence back. We saw kind of a different coaching style with Taywan Taylor in training camp, and he ultimately got traded. So it's a mixture of these things with the coaching staff, and Mike Vrabel's mentioned, hey, he's got to cut out the mental lapses, and how do they respond to him is also important.
Right, and at that position, mental lapses, man, when you're a cornerback, you're the last line. Like, you're literally the difference between a long play and a touchdown. So a short mental lapse could be a huge issue for the team. I tell you where else a mental lapse could be. That team wearing the footlocker uniforms, those officials. And like I said, talking with TD is being fused into Chase and TD this week. One of my favorite segments when it's time to blow the whistle. Elijah, let me get that music, please. Blow the whistle. Blow the whistle. That's right. You hear Too Short, blow the whistle. So that means it's time to call somebody out. Let me tell you this. These officials in this Jaguars game. All right, let's start on the holding. These guys seem to want to call holding, and I understand holding happens on almost every play. It doesn't mean you got to call it on almost every play. This is prime time. You don't have to extend the game. I understand. I believe that was, yeah, that game still had the second half is when they cut down on it.
Yep.
But, man, too many of those. But more importantly, there were two egregious calls. Just two that I'm calling. Hey, listen. I don't even want to.
You're trying to like hold in the anger. Like you're pretty frustrated. You're just like, man, don't say something you'll regret, Teron.
Exactly. So let me say it this way. The guys up there in New York, you guys had to get it together. Because you have crews out here misrepresenting you. That pass interference call on Logan Ryan was 100% pure, unadulterated horse crap.
The nice way of putting it.
If anything, that was offensive pass interference because the receiver gave a little nudge to create that separation. I'm not so sure that the ball was catchable, but regardless, he gave that nudge to create that extra separation. It was interesting what Dean P said today. He said, you know, receivers don't push off nowadays. They ward guys off. And that's an excellent point.
Mm-hmm.
You got to call that. The other one. Now, last time I checked, and I know everybody loves the stash, right? And the jorts and Gardner Minshew mania. It's not daggone Tom Brady. Why on earth? Kamala Correa, they called that roughing the passer. I mean, what? I don't put my 11-year-old, I don't tuck my 11-year-old daughter in bed at night with more care than Correa laid Gardner Minshew down. How on earth do you call roughing the passer on that one? My whistle is blown on these officials, man. That was nonsense.
Blowing the whistle on the whistleblowers. And the really crazy one to me was the Kamala Correa one. Because I saw that and I'm just like, that's a football play. I mean, there is absolutely no way Correa could have stopped himself because he was right on his back when it happened. And I know officials have a tough job. This all happens in a split second. And there's been kind of a directive that I think has come down from the NFL office where they're going to call more penalties because they want to see this shift in the game for, you know, the litany of reasons that are out there with the lawsuits. But on these holding calls, something really interesting has come up, and Pro Football Focus did a nice study on the holding calls and how that can affect a running game and how it can consistently set back a running game if they're going to call more holding. And that's something you really want to see a lot, Teron, is Derrick Henry getting the rock and staying committed to him. But it only makes it harder for the Titans to do that if the NFL wants to call more holding calls, and that really scares me for the identity of how the Titans want to make their offense if that's the direction the league is choosing to take.
It's a terrible direction. They have to get it together, but at least to their credit, there were a lot less holding calls in the Sunday games.
And I think that's something they're intentionally doing. They'll kind of pick and choose their battles. Maybe this is me overthinking it with a big conspiracy theory, but picking and choosing your battles to kind of tamper it, to throw some water on the fire. Hey guys, just so you know, like, we will be calling these. We could be calling these. Here's the evidence that we'll call this, so don't do it. Maybe.
Well, we did a good job of not losing our cool during that blow the whistle segment. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about how the Titans have done a good job of not losing their cool in the locker room despite losing back-to-back division games. We'll be right back.
And where the players play, and we ride on them things like every day. Big beats hit streets, see gangsters roaming, and parties don't stop till 8 in the morning.
Welcome to Atlanta, where the players play. And we
That's right, welcome to Atlanta. That's what's going to be playing for me when I touch down on Saturday. Chase and TD, my man Calvin Smith in for Chase. We're keeping it going. In the middle of this consecutive game streak, they've lost to the Colts, lost to the Jaguars. Both are losses that are, they have to be frustrating.
They definitely could have won both those games. They were in a good position here.
Right. And that has to be frustrating. And let's face it, the offense has, what, a total of 20, so 19 and 26 points, and or 24 points because it was 17.
Yep.
17 and 7 in the last 24 points
yep.
over 2 weeks. They allowed 39. If I'm the defense, I'm like, hey, we played well enough for us to win these games.
Absolutely.
But the thing to this team's credit is you don't have, when you talk to guys on offense, you don't have them saying, oh, well, you know, we just didn't do enough. They're looking at it as a team effort. When you talk about the pressures that we went over earlier, it's not, oh, the receivers aren't getting open. Oh, Mariota isn't saying my guys up front are getting dominated. Or even, I'm not saying that bluntly, but even hinting at that, you're not having that on offense. So within the struggles on offense, you don't have one unit pointing fingers at the other unit.
Mm-hmm.
And then within the whole team, you talk to Byard, you talk to Rashad Evans, you talk to Cam Wake, you talk to the different guys, none of them are saying, you talk to Logan Ryan, none of them are saying, well, we're playing good enough. The offense needs to get it together. But that is kind of the truth.
It definitely is. What part of the two losses can you look at the defense and say, oh, you know, that's where they could have been more? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're in the NFL. And yeah. 7 of those points for the Jaguars were a result of special teams where they're on the inside the 10-yard line.
Right.
What more can you expect from them? I mean, the Colts offense, even without Andrew Luck, is still good.
And this is why we had that sizzling Calvin's Corner last week, because my thing was take the points when this team is struggling to score points, take the points, kick the field goal, because you know the defense is pretty much the strong point. So that's why we had that segment. But it's just you're not seeing that this week, whereas there's no point finger pointing. And there have been locker rooms where, I tell you, they were ready to go to blows.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the Eagles years ago with T.O., man, he and Hugh Douglas, you know, T.O. could box a little bit, by the way. Because he gave Hugh Douglas a whap, and that whole situation was calmed down. But it was offense against defense, not gelling. But you're not seeing that here. I want to bring some of the conversations I've had with guys this week, because that's something I kind of went through the locker room and was just trying to get the feel of how these guys are handling this and how they're addressing it. Because, look, if you mess up, I'm going to hold you accountable. If I mess up, I expect you to hold me accountable. In doing that, we can't take it personally.
No, yeah.
And that's what is happening in that locker room. So I think it's really good that they're able to do that. I guess it's one of those things where, like, you play the violin and you say small victories. But let's go ahead to Logan Ryan. I thought it was pretty interesting what he had to say when I asked him about just keeping that locker room together.
How are you guys keeping your point? But yet still, everyone's being held accountable.
Because you got to worry about yourself first and foremost. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, Marcus can't play defense for us, and we can't play offense for them. We're a team. We got their back, support them 100%. There's going to be a game, unfortunately, in this season where the team might put up 30 on us, and we're going to need our offense to go and help us win that game. There might be games early on in the year where the offense might need some time to get going, and we got to find a way to get less points. I mean, I saw Jacksonville and the Colts do it with not their starting quarterbacks, and they were able to manufacture enough to get it done, to have defensively do enough to get it done. So at the end of the day, there's no point in fingers yet. I've been going to practice with these guys, been going to war with these guys for years, got their back wholeheartedly, and we're a collective team. However, we got to do it, make it work, we got to make it work.
And that's coming from one of the leaders on your team, the leaders in the locker room. And it comes even from above Logan Ryan, the coaching staff, Mike Vrabel specifically. I asked him about that on Monday, and he said that that's something that they worked on installing, incorporating during the offseason. whereas weight room, they're holding the guys accountable. And he has no problem with one guy calling the other guy out. And I don't think there should be an issue. He likes the fact that guys are willing to take that step and hold someone accountable and be a leader. And I asked him about A.J. Brown a while ago with that. And he said he actually likes the way A.J. has actually stepped up and been somewhat of a leader in certain points as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just that when you look at this locker room, you kind of think nobody is like that really kind of loudmouth guy.
Yeah.
Certainly no one is like Terrell Owens, but nobody is going to go out there and just be that pound on someone's chest and say, you got to be better right now. And it's a business at the same time. It can't get personal. Like you and I, we go back and forth about the run and the pass all the time. But at the end of the segment,
We laugh about it.
We disagree. Whatever. One of us thinks we're right. The other thinks the other's right. Whatever. Who cares? Because we're just having... I mean, this is fun to us. And they're playing football. One, they make a lot of money to do that. It's a business. But two, you assume they enjoy playing it. And it's a big part of checking your manhood at the door at the same time and being like, hey, we can disagree here. We can maybe think there's a little bit of blame on me. There's some blame on you. And let's go forward and let's be better together.
And here's the thing. When you look at it on film, it's not going to lie.
Nope.
That eye in the sky doesn't lie, right? It's going to show exactly what was done right and what was done wrong. And when you're in that film study session, you have to be able to look at it and say, hey, I probably could have caught that. Or, hey, absolutely, that effort I made on that block was terrible.
Yep.
That's where the checking has to happen. And that's one of the things that Delanie Walker talked about when I asked him. I was able to pull him aside and talk to him about just holding guys accountable and just how the locker room is keeping from blowing up. And that's when he said that he had been on teams where the finger pointing was necessary because that made things turn around. These are teams that he talked about he was on a long time ago.
Yeah.
Because he followed that up with this new NFL is a little bit different. And you mentioned the Taywan Taylor situation, right?
Last segment, yeah.
Hey, look, how many times did I turn to you and say, man, that's really something how – you see Coach Vrabel really trying to coddle him, trying to bring him along.
Yep.
You didn't really see that as much before in the older NFL. Mm-hmm. There wasn't as much of the sensitive type of correction or coaching mm-hmm. that you see now. And that's not to knock Mike Vrabel because mm-hmm. I think he's doing the right thing of knowing the buttons to push. But Delanie said, man, guys can't take criticism like that.
Yeah.
And I think when you look at the leadership on the team, one of the guys, Kevin Byard, has really adapted as far as when it comes to the right way for this age of player to bring him along. Positive reinforcement is the key word here. Check out what KB had to say.
Well, one thing I understand is it's still early in the year. Guys are going to make mistakes. We're going to make mistakes. We're not in the situation that we necessarily want to be in. We want to be 3-0, but you know, it's not the end of the world. And one thing that I don't do is, like you say, you don't point fingers. What you do is you go and watch the film, and you understand. Okay, what I do is I talk to a guy and tell him not necessarily what he's doing wrong or anything like that. I tell him like, hey, you know, this game, you know, you're a big part of this defense. You're a big part of this team. We're going to need you to play big time football. Guys watch football and guys understand that nobody wants to go out there and make mistakes. You know what I'm saying? Everybody wants to go out and be successful, and sometimes it doesn't happen. But at the end of the day, you have to keep reminding guys that you're an important part of this team and that, you know, if you keep working and keep working, you're going to have big games, because if you wasn't a great player, you wouldn't be here. So that's just my way of just trying to show leadership, just telling guys how important they are to the entire process of this for us trying to go win a championship. You're important and we're going to need you to stay in it mentally and physically. So like I said, man, I know the type of guy guys we have in our locker room. I know guys aren't pointing finger guys, and guys are high character. So, I mean, like I said, we stay the course, man. We'll get everything together.
So it's more positive reinforcement.
Yeah, got to be positive reinforcement. You know, especially when, you know, it's the difference between, you know, I let the coaches be the guys to say, hey, you need to do this, you need to do this. I'm a type of guy, because I think it's kind of different when it comes from the peers. A lot of times when you're a peer, you try to manage somebody at the same time. You know what I'm saying? I'm the type of guy, I'm going to try to hold myself accountable always and try to be an example, but at the same time letting guys know, hey, man, keep working hard, keep doing what we need to do. You're an important part of this, of the system, of how everything works. So I just try to keep positive reinforcement.
So Byers' thing was positive reinforcement, and I like that. I think he's right. Mm-hmm. But you know what else has to factor in? Pride, man. You have to have some pride. Like, if you're in the film room and you're with your group, whether it's offense as a whole or your position group, and something bad happens, you got to feel like this big. And I'm holding my fingers less than an inch apart, because you got to have pride in what you do. And if you have that pride in what you do, when you see a mistake like that, it's going to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to hurt your feelings seeing that. You want to do everything you can not to have that happen.
I think when we were talking about how Mike Vrabel treated Taywan Taylor a little differently, maybe they're how you treat guys differently in today's NFL, it speaks to pliability for me, the ability to bend, the ability to maybe change, be softer, take a little bit of a punch from a player. Not literally, of course, I'm using that as a figure of speech, but how you treat different guys in your locker room. And as long as you're a little bit, as long as you're equal, as long as you don't give too many guys too much leeway, that can be a very good thing, because we're to a point where you recognize different people learn differently and react differently. And I think that can be a good thing if it's leveraged correctly and there isn't too much leeway given.
That's a part of management, knowing how to deal with different people in different situations. Speaking of dealing with things, it's time to pay a couple bills. We'll go to a break. We'll be back, because it's time for Calvin's Corner.
This is Jason TD here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I am Calvin Smith, filling in for Chase McCabe this week. Normally we're on Fridays. Preds game tomorrow. We move the show to a Thursday night, and we're about to go into a weekly segment on Teron Davenport's podcast, Talking with TD, called Calvin's Corner, where I do my favorite thing, and I go into the analytics and the numbers and pull out some little fun things that are all related to the analytics of the growing analytics in the football world. But first, I want to make sure you know, you can go find every episode of Talking with TD on thegamenashville.com. Under the On Demand tab, just go find Talking with TD in Apple Podcasts, wherever you find your podcasts. The podcast is there for you to go listen to for the absolute best Titans podcast out there, I believe, in my humble opinion. But for this week's Calvin's Corner, typically I like to focus on the offense. And that usually means I say throw the ball more. I always say throw the ball more. But this week, I want to look at the defense and kind of where they've been weakest in terms of giving up rushing plays through what gap and passing at what distances on what side of the field. So I went in and I looked at the left side of the defense versus the right. When the offense attacks the right side of the field versus the left side of the field, deep and short. And the Titans defense is significantly better when the offense is attacking the left side of the field, which is Malcolm Butler's side. They give up about 13.67 yards on deep passes, where the minimum to reach a deep pass is 15 yards. So if you're below the threshold to get it there, well, that's pretty good. Versus on the other side of the defense, 20.5 yards on the 6 deep passes that have been attempted to that side. That's not too good. And that's a Dory Jackson side of the field where they've been beat deeper, more consistently, and opposing offenses have attacked that side of the field more on the Tennessee Titans. And then a couple times the Titans have been beat up the middle, but there isn't as much sample size there to make it as valid. But Dory Jackson's side of the defense just hasn't been as locked down as Malcolm Butler's side.
It goes back to what I said about Malcolm being a feisty corner. And I granted, right, that DJ Chark, he had a couple catches that just you know, they were just good catches.
Yep.
Including the 7-yard touchdown. But I think Malcolm has quietly settled in and become not a lockdown corner, because I think there's only two or three of them, right? I would say two, Patrick Peterson, well, three, Patrick Peterson, Stephon Gilmore, and good old Jalen Ramsey. I don't think he's getting enough credit for just how he overcame that rough situation earlier and just settled in as a player.
Well, even on short passes, that side of the field has been better. They don't even give up 6 yards per pass on short passes. And then on the other side, on the right side of the defense, over 6 yards per pass attempt. So again, they're just better on that side. That's clearly the side that they can be a little stronger towards, which kind of makes me think, well, how do you shade Kevin Byard then? Because you're more susceptible to the deep ball. You give up more short yardage to the other side of the field on Adoree Jackson's side. You probably shade Kevin Byard a little bit more to that side, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would, listen, end of the day, the biggest thing that you have to do as a safety is keep plays from becoming big plays.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're saying that the deep passes are coming to one side, I think personally that's the side you want to shade Byard to. And the thing that's really good about having a guy like Byard is he's so rangy.
Yep.
So you could have him shade towards one side if you're going to be in single high. He's still able to play center field good enough to where he could get to the other side of the field. Not other side of the field, because that's impossible.
Yep.
But cover a little bit more of the field being shaded still.
Here's something else I found really interesting. When looking at how offenses are attacking the Titans front seven in terms of run gaps, when you look at when offenses attack the right side of the Titans defense, 8.73 yards per carry versus the left side, 3.73. That's a major difference when it comes to stopping the run. When offenses run right, they're having pretty good success with a few big runs in there. Now, you know, one of those is Leonard Fournette's big run, and that's kind of going to count against you. But still, that's a pretty major susceptible hole that has to be filled, because still in today's NFL, you got to be able to stop the run. No matter how much the league wants to throw the ball, that's still an important part of sealing games and controlling the clock.
Listen, Coach Mack said it the best when I talked to him about Derrick Henry's record-setting run when I did the oral history. He said that defense, like as a defensive coach or just as a defense period, nothing is more backbreaking than an explosive run like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that has to be frustrating for the Titans is in their last two losses, pretty much a long run sealed the deal.
Yeah.
That's a problem they have to work on. And those two runs, I believe they had, yeah, in Fournette's run, they had the box stacked, and he was at a negative.
He went positive on that run.
Right. They had the box stacked, and he got to that second level, and whew, it was gone. So a team that normally tackles really well has to tackle well, especially when they have eight in the box. And he showed why on that, 69-yard run, I think it was.
Yeah, and that's not something I think we anticipated being a big issue for this Tennessee Titans defense, right? We're talking about the strong suit of the team, and overall, they've been a good defense. We see that in points scored. We see that in yards given up in every aspect. But this is also kind of my way of saying, hey, the defense is doing a good job, and I wanted to give that a little bit of give him a little bit of recognition here on Calvin's Corner, especially Malcolm Butler's side of the field, which has been significantly better and doesn't get targeted as much as Adoree Jackson's side. So opposing offenses also recognize that and say, hey, maybe we'll attack the other side that Malcolm isn't on.
Did you have any red zone stats in your package there that you put together?
Not offhand, and I should note, these stats are coming from situations that aren't garbage time.
Okay.
So like where, you know, the offense is either just throwing because they're trying to come back, or just running to run out the clock.
Got you. Because that's something I want to take a look at, because it seems like teams have had better, more success scoring against the Titans in the red zone than previous years. And that's typically, you know, something that DMPs, it's bend but don't break, right? They inside from 20 to 20, you'll get some yards, but it's typically hard to score touchdowns on the Titans. But, yeah, look at that. So, red zone team opponent scoring percentage. So, basically, that's a long way of saying red zone percentage of TDs yes. allowed. The Patriots, number one.
As always, they're always zero. Good at that.
You ready for this?
I'm ready.
I thought that was the case. I didn't know it was this bad. 85.7%. The Titans are 31st. What's really interesting is the Bills. This can't be right. There's no way a team is giving up 100% scoring percentage in red zone, but that's what it says that the Bills are giving up.
Wow. And that's the only team the Titans are better than.
That's the only team the Titans are better than, that's, according to this.
For what, if we're nitpicking at the defense, this is something we can nitpick at. The seemingly bigger weakness on Adoree Jackson's side of the field and this in the red zone here is pretty significant.
Yeah. And so it looks like the Titans are 21st, giving up 2 red zone touchdowns per game. The Bills, so it must be. Now I must have to watch more Bills, which next week that's
going
to be
to
the
town.
Opponent. But they're 9th, giving up 1.3. So there must not be a lot of opportunities to score red zone touchdowns against the Bills.
Bills' defense has been good.
Yeah, so I guess if there's one thing you could kind of nitpick about the Titans defense, it would be red zone, which is typically not something that a DNP's defense is poor in. But then another thing that I think they need to improve is, and they did it against Jacksonville, they need to improve in third down percentage.
Yeah, for sure. And that comes with how the opposing offense is setting it up. You know, how are they trying to get their yards when they get into third down situations? Are they trying to avoid them at all costs? It's all that. But I think it says something about this defense that we had to kind of work like that to nitpick at them a little bit. I mean, props to them because they haven't lost. Like we said earlier, they haven't lost these games because of them. They're doing a good job, and that's reflected in the stats.
Yeah, maybe when we go to the next segment, Dean Pease might be a candidate for the next segment after the break. We're going to go to a break and be right back because it's almost time for that Mac Daddy. That right there is Chase's song, man. It's always fun when we come back to that. You see him just bobbing his head and that big smile on his face. I guess you could say I miss my partner, my PNC partner in crime, but I still got one of my other PNCs and Calvin Smith. That being said, you're sitting in this chair.
Gotta bring it.
Who's your Mac Daddy?
And I thought about this, and the guy who came out in the locker room and said, hey, guys don't like to be called out anymore. You know, the NFL isn't the same anymore. My Mac Daddy of the week's Delanie Walker, because he wasn't getting targeted against Jacksonville, and I don't know why. I don't think that's a Delanie Walker problem. But after you come out and you're like, hey, we gotta be better. You know, the locker room, it's not the same as it was. Delanie Walker's my Mac Daddy of the week, because when you come out and do that, I want to see you come back out and do it. Because Delanie Walker is a good tight end in the NFL. He should be getting more targets than he got against Jacksonville. I don't know why he wasn't, especially considering the rapport he and Marcus Mariota have had in the past. So my Mac Daddy of the week is Delanie Walker because he came out, called him out, and was quiet against the Jags. This guy, if I'm betting on someone having a big game, I would bet on Delanie Walker.
I don't think it's a bad bet. But one thing that you said earlier is going to be interesting, and as if the Falcons go, man, Deion Jones, yes. Delanie Walker, it'll be a nice matchup. But I like the selection, and to be honest with you, Delanie said a lot with that statement.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not only in football locker rooms, it's period. You have to be so cautious. Like earlier, right, when I was talking about the officials on Blow the Whistle,
mm-hmm.
I was a little nervous to say horse crap.
Yeah.
It's a different world we live in. Now, yep. I don't curse. I don't use curse words.
You don't.
But even still, just horse crap itself is a word that you have to be nervous about. Mm-hmm. So I give it to you. You made the right selection there. I think Delaney does deserve it. Let's see what happens in Atlanta. That's going to be a matchup to watch. And you know what? I'm going to take it a little bit further. Another reason why I agree with you on Delaney being the mock daddy. You know my affection for the Woo.
Yes.
It's fun talking to Delaney a little bit about the Woo series. He watches that just like I do. So, yeah, he deserves that for sure.
And then we also have some players to watch for on offense and defense. And you have these in the grid here. And there's one for the Falcons. The guy on offense that I want to get to for you, who your player to watch for on the Falcons is, because this is one, not the biggest name out there.
Yeah. Well, as I told you on the break, I have a thing for Stanford tight ends. Yes. I always like how they play. I like how polished they come into the league. So Austin Hooper is my guy to watch. And he's someone that he had two touchdowns against the Colts. He has been a red zone answer for all the attention that goes to Julio Jones. Mm-hmm. So when you have that red zone situation and you're throwing the back shoulder and you're just looking at ways that you could go to Julio Jones, it's nice to have a guy to compliment him and be a weapon in Hooper. So he's someone that I feel really should be a player to watch. In addition to that, he's the guy that will help in third down situations. Yep. Also. So Austin Hooper is my player to watch for the Falcons on offense. Who do you have?
Mine, I'm going to go with the guy who was really quiet last week. One catch, 6 yards. He and I share the same first name. Huh. Calvin Ridley. Because this is the kind of guy who we think Adoree Jackson will guard. The matchup just kind of seems to work out. Two really athletic, quick guys.
Mm-hmm.
I think Calvin Ridley, if Adoree Jackson is not in the right frame of mind, Calvin Ridley is the guy who can run by you and run by you quick and with a sharp route. He was one of my favorite wide receivers coming out of his draft. I couldn't believe he fell all the way to Atlanta, which is just adding to their weapons. I really like the guy. That's why I'm going to pick him, because you have to devote a lot to Julio.
Yeah.
But Calvin Ridley is so fast. He can be like a Swiss Army knife.
Polish.
Yes.
That's what he has. So on offense for the Titans, listen, Corey Davis is my guy to watch. I want to see when he goes against Desmond Trufant. We didn't talk about Desmond on this show, but that is one sticky cover corner. So I just want to see how that whole matchup happens. Marcus Mariota said that he needs to get him the ball more. Listen, let's not say it, let's do it.
Yep.
And I think it is time for Corey Davis to be more of a feature. You saw the one-hand snatch
that was
he
nice.
Had against the Jaguars. He's playing with a little bit of attitude, so let's see how that works. Who do you have for the Titans?
Adam Humphries.
Okay.
Because a lot of his catches came kind of when the game was already very close to being decided. I wouldn't say the game was over at that point, but when Adam Humphries started to make his impact, it was kind of when the game was already over. A little bit of stat padding, if you will. And this is what we've talked about with Adam Humphries. When are they going to go to him as a featured part of this offense from the beginning? Because that's what you go and pay a guy $10 million to do, right? I want to see it from the beginning. A guy who, we talk about the short passing game, that's where it starts with Adam Humphries. That's what you bring him in here to do. So my player to watch for is Adam Humphries, and if they're going to actually want to incorporate him early and often.
Real quick, on defense for the Titans, I'm going to go with Malcolm Butler. I talked about the feistiness that he brings. I think we have to see how he's going to defend Julio Jones. So that's my guy for the Titans to watch. Who do you have?
I'm going to go Kevin Byard.
Okay.
Because they're going to throw the ball deep. Julio can stretch the field. Calvin Ridley can stretch the field. Austin Hooper might run a seam. That's where you need a center fielder out there. And not many guys are better at picking off the ball than Kevin Byard.
Yeah, and that's a good selection because Kevin Byard, this is a homecoming for him.
It is. He is from around there.
He's originally from Philly. He moved to Atlanta. So I'm sure he's going to be a little bit lighter in the pocket from the ticket side of things.
Yep.
But good selection there. We talked about my Falcons player to watch on defense enough, so I don't really have to say much, but Deion Jones is my guy to watch on the Falcons defense. Who do you got?
Vaughn McClure, I wanted to ask him about Grady Jarrett, but he just went and talked about him early on. So Grady Jarrett's the kind of guy who can wreak havoc on the interior of an offensive line, and that's where the Titans are weakest right now. He can go out and probably beat Jameel Douglas. Ben Jones is a good center, but this is the kind of guy who, like we talked about earlier, sets things up for the pass rushers on the outside so they can pin their ears back. So I'm going to go with Grady Jarrett, because if he can get Mariota moving his feet, getting a little bit uncomfortable, that is a very bad situation for Mariota where he's a little bit upset, not upset, uncomfortable and not in his comfort zone where a guy, a big 300-pound man is right in his face.
Yeah, and that's something that Arthur Smith said when he was asked about play calling and how it's a lot easier to kind of armchair and do it. And he said that, man, it's a lot different when you got an 8-foot monster like Calais yes. Campbell coming into your face. So excellent point there. I don't care what quarterback you're talking about. Anybody that receives a snap, if you collapse that pocket from the inside,
mm-hmm.
it's kryptonite for him. I don't care who it is.
Something I meant to mention earlier, Matt Ryan is on pace to throw the most interceptions of his career.
Mm.
I mentioned Kevin Byard is my guy to watch because he can pick the ball off and they're going to want to throw the ball deep. That's been a problem for Matt Ryan this year. His interception rate is almost at 5%. He threw 7 interceptions last year. He's already thrown 6 this year. That's something the Titans can really take advantage of to get on the positive side of the turnover margin and maybe early, unlike against Jacksonville.
Is this a big week for Jarrell Casey?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I think Jarrell Casey is due for one of his typical performances. We know he's a guy that doesn't really fill up a stat sheet, but
yep.
he is someone that can help others fill up the stat sheet. Mm-hmm. So
in a Grady Jarrett similar-ish role.
Right. And it's just what we're doing here just kind of goes to show you how defense just kind of comes together like a puzzle. Or for my older guys, it comes together like Voltron. Right,
oh, I don't because even know what Voltron is.
Oh my goodness, Voltron is an old toy where it was 5 separate pieces, and they came together and they form like this giant that's indestructible.
Okay,
so that's why I use the analogy, and you have the separate pieces. And you mentioned Byard making the interception. You mentioned. Not Grady Jarrett, but Jarrell Casey collapsed in the middle. But then also you got Harold Landry, Cameron Wake, these guys getting their pass rushes.
Getting to pin their ears back and be comfortable, come right at it.
It all comes together. End of the day, I don't see the Titans winning this game.
Sadly, I think it's a pretty steep mountain to climb.
Going into Atlanta to beat a Falcons team that's high-powered. However, I was wrong last week. About the Titans beating the Jaguars, if I'm wrong this week, about the Falcons beating the Titans, so be it. This is what happens, and that's why you watch the game. Calvin, excellent work. You made this easy. You filled in perfectly. I appreciate you. And, man, it was good being on Calvin's Corner for 2 hours instead of 15 minutes.
I appreciate it. And, hey, Chase McKay will be back here next week. Remember, you can find every episode of Talking with TD in Apple Podcast, wherever you find your podcast. Just search Talking with TD if you want more of the great content Teron brings every week and all the hard work he puts in.
Deuces.